Hi, everyone. Welcome to this week's Off the Bench. My name is Pras, and I'm joined by my good friend Gianni. Gianni, how are you doing?
Hey, Pras. Yeah, I'm really well, mate. We've got a very busy show coming up. First, we're going to be digesting all the Game Week 21 action. And then, of course, we'll have a closer look at the likes of Leeds and Brighton and Brentford, all catching the eye, as well as, of course, the usual suspects. But there's the FA Cup fourth round and both legs of the League Cup semis to come before the Game Week 22 deadline, which, by the way, could be a double for the likes of United and Leeds. So much can still happen, but there's still so much to talk about. Did you have a good game week, Pras?
I had a very good game week. I'm so delighted to be on the show after a good game week, finally. I got 90 points and pretty much every one of the differentials worked out. Like I had Kepa over other people's Edison or Ramsdales. I had Tyrone Mings ahead of other people's Akes. And obviously Kane came through. So it was a good week overall, so. Happy.
Good stuff. I'm glad to hear that. I'm glad to hear you had a green arrow. I had a small red arrow. I think I'm 220k and I think I was 212 before the game week. So a very small red. I made a couple of 50-50 calls that went the wrong way for me. The Brighton midfield spot didn't work out. And we'll speak more about that later. The whole Matoma versus March debate. Interestingly enough, I had a good chat with Kelly Summers around her decision on that. And she decided to go Matoma, benefited. I went March and I was at the game and I'll speak more about that later about what I saw and who I think is the right call moving forward there. And I think I may have made an error.
Right. Well, we both captained Haaland. So that's at least one tick, right?
Yeah. He didn't disappoint. Sod's Law, loads of us triple captain Haaland the week before. We had one goal over two game weeks. And then, of course, in a single game week, he goes and gets a mega haul. That's just what Haaland can do in any single or double, I guess. Let's have a look at Man City because they've obviously caught the eye yet again. We all have Haaland in our team and a lot of us have a Man City midfielder. Some of us have a Man City defender and there's been a lot of heartache there, hasn't there, for Cancelo owners. But even those that replace Cancelo with, say, an Ake or an Akanji or a Stones, they've all had like one benching in the last few weeks. Where do you sit with that Man City defence? Is it a defence you think we need to invest in? Because they are also, and they kept clean sheet against Wolves, but they have been conceding too.
Yeah, so I think fundamentally, I believe in the City defence. They are still the best defence in the league. I think where I have a problem is we've lost the big upside defender in Cancelo. So we don't have that big defender. So now we're talking about 6 points, whether it's Stones, whether it's Ake, whether it's Akanji, whether it's Edison. Yes, fair enough, they can get a bullet header at any time. You can't predict that. So if you're talking low upside defenders for 5.5-6 million, then why wouldn't I go for a double up in Arsenal defense or a Newcastle defense or have another Man United defender who are basically also keeping clean sheets this year, but are all sub 5 million. So that's basically why I think maybe a City defender isn't needed.
And the way Rico Lewis is playing as well, he's of course a really budget option, but it's interesting to see the tweak in Pep's formation with Rico. And look, we've seen it at times with Cancelo, but when he goes for in a back four, almost three centre-backs along with a Cancelo or a Rico Lewis, you see that fourth defender pushed into midfield and he sort of plays alongside Rodrigo, which means it's a back three. And as you say, those centre-backs in the back three, whether that's Diaz, Stones, Laporte, Ake, Akanji, whichever one's playing, you feel like the ceiling very much is 6 points because they're not going to get forward. They have a small chance of a goal at a set piece. But other than that, certainly in open play, the ceiling is so, so low. And you think if I'm spending similar sort of money, I can get a fullback from United or Arsenal that might give me some upside in terms of expected assists.
Correct. And as you said, there's not been a single defender who's played every game. And now Diaz is back as well. So I would think, look, if people really wanted to go there, then Stones is your guy. But he's your guy for what? Another few game weeks until Pep changes his mind. So, yeah, I think we're aligned. If you wanted to go there, maybe a Stones, maybe Edison, but otherwise there's other options.
Yeah. What about midfield, Pras? Are you a KDB owner or are you
I'm a KDB owner. I switched from Salah to KDB ahead of the double. He's fine. I think KDB has clearly changed his role to be the assister this season. I mean, he's always been the creator, but you know, you can clearly see he's not even taking as many shots as the season's passed. It's all funneled to Haaland. But then if it's a double game week or heading into a period where you expect a lot of minutes from KDB, I think he's better shout than Salah anyway. So that was the thinking. But yeah, Riyad Mahrez is the guy who's now getting the minutes, getting the expected data, and obviously got the 19-pointer in the double. So I have my eye on him. Do you own Mahrez already?
No, I own Kevin De Bruyne and I'm fairly happy there. That Mahrez is great value at the moment, but you wouldn't be surprised if in the next few weeks he comes out of that 11. For the time being, he feels very much guaranteed a start. But you're never too safe. And of course, there's so much depth there in the Man City squad for someone to come in and replace him. But whilst he's playing well, Mahrez owners take a bow. Well done for going for him off the back of a World Cup in which he had a nice rest. With so many players coming back late for Man City, we did think he was going to be a starter come game week 17, 18. He's had points as well as starts, which is so key. And he's looked really good. Him, Haaland and Grealish seems to be the preferred front three, doesn't it? Mahrez on the right, Grealish on the left and Haaland down the middle. Doesn't look like Pep's going to veer away from that too often at the moment. But again, look, Foden's going to come into the mix at some point, isn't he?
Yeah, Foden got an injury, which we don't know how serious that is. It doesn't sound like it is. But yeah, it just basically makes both Grealish and Mahrez as nailed picks. And if that continues over the double, I think Mahrez clearly is a very, very good pick.
Where do you stand on triple captain, Praz? Because so many that didn't go triple captain in game week 20 for Haaland's double, and I know I did and you didn't, were looking at City have a double in 23. That might be the right time. But of course, we could have a double for Man United next week. And Rashford has two very nice home fixtures versus Haaland's in 23. Not the easiest fixtures. Have you had any thoughts on triple captain? And are you close to looking at Rashford in 22? Or are you very much a case of it will go to Haaland at some point, possibly 23 or possibly later?
I was off the thinking that I will captain Haaland in 23. But now that the Man United double has landed, well, should land if neither of the teams get the replay, then I'm thinking of Rashford. I mean, both home games, with the team has been solid defensively as well. So you get clean sheet points, extra point for a goal. So basically to match an 8-point Haaland, you need one goal, one clean sheet, and that's it. So I'm pretty much keen on going for Rashford. We'll come to the Man United discussion in more detail and talk about some of their assets. But at the moment, I agree with you. I could have waited for Haaland, but the fact that their double is on a Sunday and then a Wednesday and then Alvarez is getting more and more minutes by game week, I just feel like go for the nailed 90 minutes guy who's going to play twice.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I look forward to seeing how managers use that triple captainship. And some might think, shall I leave it for the doubles later in the season? Of which there will be lots of doubles later in the season. But for me, they're the weeks when you want to experiment with your wild card, your free hit, your bench boost. And if the triple captainship is out the way, it feels like the wrong term. But if the triple captainship has already been used, it allows you complete flexibility to go for the upside on the larger doubles around the free hit, bench boost and wild card. And for me, they're the more powerful chips.
Absolutely. I mean, ultimately, triple captain is one extra player across 38 game weeks that you can have. So we sometimes overplay it. And I think it's the other chips like the bench boost, like the free hit, if played at the right time, can potentially be more powerful.
Good stuff. Well, I look forward to chatting United and Arsenal slightly later in the show. Also going to have to touch on Leeds and Brighton and Brentford. But Newcastle, they've been so popular amongst all our FPL teams, haven't they? They've been doing really well. And clean sheets are just like, feel so guaranteed at the moment, but they're not scoring many. I this week Praz sold Almiron, and I was slightly nervous with someone like Almiron's ownership, had a Crystal Palace fixture which looked okay on paper. You're thinking if he does score and we do see the early season form that we saw from Almiron, then it can really hurt your rank. But the way Newcastle have been playing of late and the way Almiron's been playing, I felt pretty confident selling him. I was okay with that decision. Newcastle attack, if you're on a Wilson or an Almiron, to me it's a sell, but it's of course a hold if you own a defender, but probably a buy. Like for some reason, very few of us seem to have double or triple Newcastle defense, and they absolutely deserve that level of respect that we should be owning two or three Newcastle defenders. I still only own Trippier, and he's that highly owned that when he does well, I don't really benefit from a Newcastle clean sheet anymore. You have to have two Newcastle defenders to really benefit. Yeah. And I know they could blank in game week 25, but the points are there now. And for some reason, I'm buying players like Ake, who's had two single pointers, instead of Botman, who's had two clean sheets in the last fortnight. Really frustrating, because that was a move I did consider. Are you still firmly just on Trippier, or are you looking to expand on that Newcastle bat line?
Look, I think on Newcastle, Eddie Howe, after the break, has become a lot more pragmatic, especially in the away matches. So they were already solid at home before the World Cup break. And so this has meant that the output has drastically reduced. So I agree with you that Wilson and Almiron aren't the same players as we saw them. Now, something has to change. They've scored one goal in the past four games. They've conceded none, but that's not going to get them into the Champions League. So it's basically a case of Eddie Howe calibrating the team too much. I mean, I almost think of it as a volume button, and he's turned it down too much and it's too defensive. So I think this will change again. But I have to sort of think about the blank that's coming up in 25. And if we load up too much on Man United and Newcastle, and for the listeners, if Man United and Newcastle make it to the finals of the Carabao Cup, which will be held this game week, then they will blank in game week 25 because that will be the final of the Carabao Cup. So if you're overloaded on Man United because you want them for the double, which is coming up, and then you go for more Newcastle players, how many are you benching? And then what are you doing? Are you taking hits ahead of that? So I really, it's the dilemma. It's the classic dilemma where you tend to want good players, but are you being blinded by this blank and basically ignoring them at your peril? So basically that's the dilemma. And I think everyone will have Newcastle defense 2, maybe even 3 going forward if this continues. I'm just skeptical if that happens before game week 25 or not.
1 goal in 4 isn't good enough. You're right. Like for top 4 ambitions, you've got to improve on that. But why aren't Newcastle scoring goals? The fixtures have been there for them. Yeah. It's hard to put your finger on it. I mean, they're playing a similar 11 to what we saw pre-World Cup when they were scoring goals for fun. Isak is now back fit. And I do wonder if Eddie Howe will experiment with playing Wilson and Isak. And again, Almiron, I'm sure, is going to get in the 11 for the time being. I think he's got enough credit in the bank. But should Newcastle move to a front two, it'll be interesting to see what happens to the wide forwards. And we've seen Joe Linton playing wide left and Almiron playing wide right. And I do wonder if Joe Linton drops back into that midfield 3 and then you get an extra attacker in the team. Although Correct. Joe Linton was historically a forward, we know in that Newcastle shirt, he's been a much better central midfielder than he has been a wide or central forward. So I look forward to seeing how Eddie Howe looks to maybe fix the goal threat. But of course, he doesn't want to change too much because the way the team is set up, they are guaranteed to keep clean sheets. It feels like that.
Yeah, it does. It does. I mean, Joe Linton and Almiron work so hard. It's hard to see them sort of lose both. But I hear you. It could be Isak instead of Wilson or together. The attack is in flux. We've never seen actually Isak and Wilson play together or be fit at the same time, which is strange. But we will see. But I think it's a team that's been priced preseason as a team that's a top 10, top 6 team, but it's obviously a Champions League contender, and that makes it very appealing for FPL.
Let's have a look at some teams that we do always back to score. Look, typical, Leeds are one of them, and they've just come off the back of a blank this weekend without a goal, and Brighton. So Leeds and Brighton are two teams with managers that I just like to back in FPL. I think Jesse Marsh and I think De Zerbi, the way both teams are set up, yes, they're not necessarily, in Leeds' case, flying high in the table, but they're a team I back to score goals and they have good value players. So if we look at that Leeds team, there's a few that have caught the eye. For me, like, I'm a massive fan of Wilfred Gnonto and I'm just delighted to see him getting starts and also 90 minutes.
Yeah.
Pre-World Cup, he was in and out the team. He's been eased in slowly. This is a teenager who's new to the country and new to the squad and new to the manager. But Wilfred Gnonto very much looks like the main man in the attacking lineup at Leeds. He's the only one that I feel like, looking at all those players, that at the moment is going to get 90 minutes. Some are in and out. Even the likes of Rodrigo usually comes off. And knowing we're going into what we hope will be a double game week for Leeds, I wonder if many will take that punt. He's a 5 million forward, which is slightly frustrating. If he was a midfielder, maybe he'd get a little bit more love. Of course, he's often playing as a wide forward, and sometimes they're categorized as forwards and sometimes midfielders in this game. But is he someone you've looked at? Because I guess it depends a lot on squad structure, doesn't it? But he's a really good option.
Very good option. And I think if you wanted to go for a 3-5-2 kind of structure where you don't need to play Gnonto every week, you basically have him as your third striker and you just get him for the double and then you don't worry about it. Then you play your 5 mids. Because the real value right now in FPL, and as it's been in seasons past, is midfielders. There's so many good midfielders, the Arsenal boys, the Man City boys, the Man United boys. So you want to load up on midfield. So Gnonto sort of enables that. My problem with Gnonto is, well, number one, you've got Sinisterra, Bamford coming back. So it's an attack in flux. So I do agree that Nonto's doing really well and probably holds his place, but you don't just want him in 22. You also want him in 25 and 28, which are the blanks. So it keeps coming back to the idea that, are you going to be carrying players who are maybe not as nailed during that period? So which is why I'm thinking, do I really want to go for that spot, which I may have to work, you know, on again if a blank comes? So I'm thinking, if there is a player that I go for from a Leeds attack, it'll be Gnonto, just because he can enable a 5-man midfield. Again, we'll see Leeds 3 times over the break, actually once over the FA Cup. And if I see Bamford's minutes, I think Bamford looks interesting, but I think Gnonto is a good pick overall.
Yeah, I would just loved seeing Nonto's goal. For those listeners that watched the FA Cup replay highlights against Cardiff, he got a brace in that game. But one of the goals, it was Di Canio-esque. Such a good volley. And this kid, like a lot of Leeds fans are thinking, how have we got so lucky? How have we landed him? He was playing in the Swiss League, but he'd actually played a couple of times. And this is my Italian bias here coming out, Praz. But he'd played a couple of times for Mancini's Italy before he even moved to Leeds. Like he must have been 17, 18 at the time. And I remember watching him come on in the Nations League, of which I think Italy finished top of their group. But Nonto came on the right and just looked electric. And straight away, I thought, who is this kid? And I did a bit of research and I could see he was being linked with a lot of the big Italian teams. I think Juventus in for him. So the fact that Leeds managed to pick him up, I think, is just amazing business. And Jesse Marsh has done very well there.
Okay.
And seeing him now playing from the left rather than the right, but even taking up central positions, I do think we're going to get some goals there. But of course, at 5 million, you can't expect too much. And I don't think buyers bringing him in will expect goals in both games across the double. But I'd expect one return.
Yeah, I like Leeds a lot. It's amazing to watch them play. I mean, that's the kind of team. We'll come to Brighton next, which is similar. It's just good teams in the Premier League these days. It's not just sit back and wait for the opposition and then we'll try to counter. They give them a game. If we have a Leeds attacker that we can completely count on, then I think they're a good shout. Do you think Nonto will play both the games and sort of keep his position?
Yeah, I really do. Even with the likes of Sinisterra and Bamford coming back in, I think players like Rodrigo and Jack Harrison are therefore at risk. But the way Nonto is playing and the fact he's been scoring goals, the two in the League Cup, admittedly, I think Jesse Marsh would be very reluctant to bench him. I always look at players when I'm not sure about their minutes in the next couple of weeks. I always go back and see, yes, great, they've started. But I go back and see how many minutes they got. And if they're 90-minute men, then it's showing me that even when that manager is making attacking substitutions, he's still giving Nonto 90. That gives me confidence as a potential buyer. For example, the game week just gone, a lot of the other attackers, including Rodrigo, they were subbed off. No, Nonto still got the 90, and he's had the 90 in the last few weeks. So for me, I'd be very confident of that injuries can happen. And of course, big dips in form can happen. But as things stand and going what we know, I think Nonto, I wouldn't be surprised to see him get two lots of 90 at all.
Right. Yeah, interesting. I like that shout. And a lot of people were thinking about Rodrigo for the minutes risk. I personally am not going there. I think the other thing to talk about is Leeds defense. Now, we haven't talked about Leeds defense in seasons past. And again, there from an underlying data perspective, the defense hasn't been doing great. But look, two clean sheets since the World Cup break. They've signed Max Wobber, who's done well since his debut. What are your thoughts? I mean, could you look at yourself for a Meslier or maybe even a Wobber or a Cooper as just your fifth defender and you get a double out of them?
I was, before this game week, looking at Meslier thinking you get save points with him, you get the double game week potentially, but also over the blanks, you have another goalkeeper that can come in, right? Not necessarily having that with all your outfield players, depending on how many you have that might play in the blanks of 25 and 28. So I like the look of Meslier. And usually I'd say, yeah, they've just come off the back of a clean sheet. I still like Meslier. But it was always my plan to sell Kepa. But now Kepa's just come off the back of a 10 and a 9 pointer. I'm really reluctant to sell. So for me, it was Meslier or no one. And now I'm thinking it will probably be no one in terms of that Leeds back line. The defence options are cheap, like, you know, 4.5, 4.4 options. But again, I think it just concerns me that I would have too many that potentially blank later down the line, knowing we're all invested in the likes of United and Newcastle players.
Yeah. I mean, Leeds are also under threat of a blank. It's unlikely, but they could be under threat of a 25 blank. So I'm with you. I think the priorities for FPL managers at the moment need to be, how do I get a third Man United if you don't have one? How do I get a second or third Arsenal if you don't have them for the double in 23? And how do I get my right second or third Man City ahead of their double? And these are the best teams at the moment. They have doubles coming up. So sort of try not to be blinkered by a Leeds double, which may get you points, but you know there's higher probability of the other teams doing so.
Yeah, and that fixture at Elland Road, Praz, like it was Brentford nil, Leeds nil, Brentford the away team, but David Raya just made a couple of worldy saves. He's 4.7 million, but speaking of goalkeepers, he's had three clean sheets in four matches. Again, I don't see many owning Brentford goalkeepers or defenders, and I wonder if perhaps they've flown a little bit under the radar.
They have. I mean, if Kepa didn't exist this season, I think more people would be on Raya because he's good with bonus, good with saves. It's a defense that's improving this season. So I think he's a very, very good shout for a 4.5, 4.7 keeper. And as I said, I think if I didn't have Kepa as the option of a, you know, Chelsea keeper, which is too good to turn down, I think more would have Rea.
Yeah. What about other Brentford players? Like Tony's always been a bit of a go-to. He's still fairly highly owned, Tony.
Yeah.
Many bought him in with that Leeds fixture in mind. And he had a couple of shots, but I think he failed to hit the target with all of them, all those three shots he had against Leeds. Slightly frustrating for those that looked at Tony in game week 21. He managed to get the goal. He earned himself a penalty, scored the penalty. And as always with Tony, when he scores, he seems to always be in and around the bonus. So if Brentford win 1-0 and Tony gets the goal, which is what I think we saw in game week 20, then he mops up those bonus points as well.
Yeah, you see, with strikers, there's so much credit that you get in the bonus point system with that goal, which is a winning goal. I mean, you saw Kane yesterday. He didn't get one because he was punished for that big header, big chance missed. So there's a big BPS deduction for that.
I love the bonus point system. I think it's 32 metrics. And as you say, like you're not only competing with the opposition with the bonus points, but you're competing with your teammates.
Yeah.
So Harry Kane, for example, in a 1-0 win, you would just expect him to get all three. But he's competing with good performances from the likes of Emerson Royale that mopped up all three, who had really good stats in terms of tackles and key passes and interceptions. So yeah, it's a really interesting metric. And many perhaps aren't always familiar with, oh, why did that player get three or why did that player get two? But it's based on stats and those numbers don't lie. And if we understand what those stats are, then we can pick players that we know, for example, are bonus points magnets. And there are bonus points magnets in this game. I always think the likes of Kevin De Bruyne, if he is involved in a goal, he's usually got really good underlying BPS because of things like key passes, for example.
Or the bonus legend this season, which is Kieran Trippier.
Of course, we have to speak about Trippier with bonus, don't we? I mean, he picked up a yellow card, Praz, didn't get a goal or an assist, and he still got three bonus.
I mean, he gets bonus if Newcastle concede. That's how much he's creating BPS. Just pass after pass, chance created after chance created, on set pieces, even the corners. Sometimes he takes short corners and then swings it in, so basically gets another chance created credit. So it's crazy. I mean, that guy, we've talked Newcastle, so we don't need to talk about him again, but he's a gift. He's a gift this year.
Yeah, he does feel to be one. Look, if we're going to stay on the bonus points theme, then we have to talk about Brighton and Mitoma, because he got three bonus at the weekend, and it was really helped by, sure, he scored a goal, but it was also that creation of a big chance, which Solly Marsh, player I own, missed. Mitoma versus March is a debate that's still worth having. And yes, we could see blanks for Brighton, but the points are there now. And for those that moved early on Brighton midfielders, or for those that moved early on Mitoma in the game week just gone, they were heavily, heavily rewarded. And that they've got Bournemouth up next, I think the points just continue. Brighton are an attack I feel like we should have covered in our teams. And the way they're playing with their wide forwards, which is in a 4-3-3 system, it's similar to what we saw with De Zerbi at Sassuolo, is the wide forwards are the talisman in the team. And the number nine, whether that's Welbeck or Ferguson, when you look at the average position maps, they're dropping deep, they're getting on the ball, and they're spraying it to the wide forwards. And Solly March looks like a new player under De Zerbi, but Matoma's just got that X factor. Such a joy to watch. I was behind the goal Leicester as Mitoma hit the top bins. And all week I'd been deciding, do I go Mitoma or March? To see that was quite painful for me.
The excitement with De Zerbi's Brighton is there. And, you know, they're smashing teams. I wouldn't sort of count them out of even the Champions League race, the way they're playing right now. They're a prime example of ignore the blanks, go for the player if you can. So obviously people have different fires, different team structures. So if you're able to, I think these are players that you must target. But look, I have to tell you, Gianni, you were unlucky, man. I mean, Mitoma got one shot, one goal off what, outside the box, a worldie, 0.02 XG. And here Solly March is, where he does a Mitrovic with his shot right in front of goal, high XG chance. And the irony of the whole thing is, because Mitoma was the one who passed to him, he got, back to our BPS discussion, got a big chance created, hence the three bonus. So you, not only did you lose out on the goal, Mitoma got the assist in a way anyway, because he made with the 3 points through the bonus.
Yeah, this is how into FPL I must be, Praz. I was watching the game live and then I'm sat there on my phone going, is Mitoma still on for three bonus? This is before he sets up March for that chance. And he wasn't. And setting up March for that chance just had saw him get a massive leap. So it felt like he was getting those three assist points regardless.
Yeah,
I can't believe there I was watching live in-play bonus points at a game. Friend I was with was like, get off your phone. I was like, this is how into FPL I clearly am. Estupiñán was amazing too. And I think he was in and around the bonus before even the second goal. And
yeah.
And a left back that's, I think he's around 4.5 million with two assists. He looks like a real player. And I couldn't believe how advanced Estupiñán and Pascal Gross, who was playing right back, how advanced those fullbacks were, which is great because when they do push up, you do see Matoma and Solly March, therefore, going infield, which is great because then they're closer to the goal. But the fullbacks really providing the width there. And Estupiñán, Pascal Gross isn't listed as a defender, but Estupiñán definitely on my radar too.
Oh yeah, finally we have a Brighton defender who we know is, you know, fairly nailed, but also attacking. I mean, people are going for Dunk and Webster and Veltman, and you know, they were fine, but not or Lamptey. But now you have actually a good prediction of minutes as well as attacking potential. So Estupiñán, I think, is a good pick. Again, if you're prioritizing a Brighton player, you go for the attackers. I mean, these guys, what was it? Over two goals in 7 out of the last 8 matches. Absolutely insane. So attackers first, but I think as a defender, Estupiñán is a good option as well.
Well, that's a good stat. I knew they were free-flowing, but I didn't realise their attack was quite that good. McAllister, some were looking at McAllister, perhaps instead of March or Matoma, knowing that post-World Cup, Zerbia said maybe he'll be played in a slightly more attacking number 10 role. So I was really keen to eye test scout him. And by the way, he picked up a yellow card. So that's his fifth booking of the season. So he'll miss game week 22 anyway.
Right.
So it's an avoid for me, McAllister. But even without that suspension, he actually played in the midfield too with Caicedo, and we saw Lallana in the 10. So I think that'll be fixture dependent and perhaps fitness dependent on other players. Yes, McAllister has that penalty appeal. But other than that, in terms of open play chances and goals, you just look at the wide forwards in March and Matoma, all around the same price point. They're actually cheaper than McAllister.
Yeah.
It's a no-brainer.
Agreed. I think we're aligned there. If we had seen a few games where he was playing the 10 and you got the output, then go there. But I think that you've got two better options.
Yeah. Couple of big games we've not touched on, Praz. Arsenal versus United, Liverpool, Chelsea, and then even Spurs, Fulham. I think there's FPL interest in all those three fixtures we've seen. So let's have a look at those three.
Yeah.
If we're going to start, and look, we've just been talking about three good midfield options within a team at Brighton. Well, it's the same at Arsenal. It's like, which one do you go for? And I think I'm right in saying, last time we spoke, you were a Saka owner.
Yep.
And watching those three midfielders against United, it was certainly, you look at that game and think, yeah, Saka's the one. He's more expensive, but he's the star boy in that team.
Absolutely. I mean, as a Man United fan, that was a painful watch, given how dominating Arsenal were. But yes, from their attack, everything goes through Odegaard, Saka. I mean, Martinelli is great and he does a lot of hard work, but I feel like he's not swapping positions when Jesus was playing instead of Nketiah. And so Nketiah himself is a great option. So I'm thinking between those four, unfortunately, Martinelli's come to the third or fourth spot and you've sort of had Saka, Nketiah and Odegaard taking the first three. So that's just from the eye test and the stats back this as well. Nketiah is getting so many big chances. But I think back to your question on Saka, I see him as the talisman more in terms of the creation. I mean, everyone looks to him for the run. Everyone looks to him for set pieces, especially on the right-hand side. And obviously, he's probably on pens as well. So for me, he's the best attacker from that Arsenal side, both from an eye test as well as the data over the season.
Loads of us are on Martinelli, though, because we had him at the start of the season because of his value, right?
Yeah.
So what do we do with Martinelli? I think we have to hold. But if you own two Arsenal players and Martinelli is one of them, you hold and you buy a third ahead of the double. If you already own three and one of them is Martinelli and you can make that swap from Martinelli to Odegaard or Martinelli to Saka, I think you make it. And I think what you say about Jesus there is really interesting, because when he was in the team, the way Jesus plays, he doesn't occupy the traditional number nine spaces. He's dropping short. He's involved in so much play. And he likes to drift left, Jesus. Yep. So when he does all those things, Martinelli runs beyond and he takes up those central positions and he becomes more of a goal threat. Nketiah is very different to Jesus. Done incredibly well. I'm so pleased to see Nketiah getting this run. And I'm so pleased to see that Arsenal haven't been linked with a number nine. Knowing Jesus was injured, I did think, will they go and buy? But they've not needed to, because they've seen Nketiah playing so well just before that January transfer window opened. I think the timing was probably very good for Nketiah. And he's slightly different. He occupies more of those number nine areas and therefore isn't leaving the box much. And therefore that doesn't give Martinelli the space to run into. And watching the game at the weekend, seeing Martinelli come off and even Trossard come on, and knowing Trossard has been signed,
correct,
I don't think Trossard's coming into that 11 straight away. But if Martinelli's performances continue to perhaps dip a little bit and Trossard continues to do well off the bench, there's also that slight risk that perhaps in the next few weeks, maybe we do see Trossard work his way into that 11. I don't know.
Until the double, you'll be fine. I think Martinelli owners, like you said, he's not going to eat up minutes in the league. I think he'll get some minutes in the cup. The threat is there. And even if it's a 10-minute threat, I mean, you remember against Brighton, Martinelli got a last-minute goal. If you're not on the pitch and Trossard's come on for you, then you're not involved. So you're missing out on points, even if it's a 10-minute substitution rather than a 80 versus 90 is a difference. So I think you're right. If you have Martinelli as your third, keep him. I don't think a hit is worth moving on because, you know, he's still a good player and he's fairly nailed. But if you don't have him, then I think there are other options. Or if you really have the luxury to make a Martinelli into a Saka or an Odegaard or an Nketiah through a double transfer, maybe that's an option you look at.
Yeah. If you were to own three Arsenal players right now, which three would it be? Because for me, it would be three Arsenal attackers.
It would be.
I would own Saka, Odegaard and Nketiah, given the choice. And that would mean, I'd have to sell Ben White. But there's so many good defenders around that 4.5 million price point. We've just spoken about Estupiñán, for example. I'd be happy saying goodbye to an Arsenal defender to have triple Arsenal attack. And regrettably, in that triple attack, Martinelli wouldn't be one of my three either, another player I own. So it's going to be interesting to see, knowing that they double in 23, if FPL managers look at even making Arsenal to Arsenal transfers. We often call them sideways moves, but it feels like there is the upside for those moves to perhaps be worth that 4-point hit. It will be very interesting to see if FPL managers make that move.
Yeah, and if, you know, they have a very tough FA Cup fourth round with Man City. So let's assume, and not to offend any Arsenal managers, let's assume they take, you know, they prioritize the league and don't put out the best team and they lose to Man City. Then you're basically looking at a clear run of no blanks until game week 28. So I think doing some surgery and getting the absolute right three Arsenal that you want would make sense because these guys are so cheap. I mean, we're talking about Odegaard, Saka. I mean, Saka is the most expensive one. Well, he's cheaper than Foden. So, you know, why not go there if you can? So I think it could be worth it, especially if they're out of the cup and they're basically, as I said, no blanks in the horizon.
Yeah, and you've got to think, like, there's going to be a bit of squad rotation if they continue in the FA Cup. But also, of course, they're in the Europa League. But the absolute priority for Arsenal, of course, is going to be the Premier League. And it feels like there is something special brewing at the Emirates. And seeing how pumped Arteta was and even the Arsenal players' reaction at the final whistle, you know, they are backing themselves for this title. And therefore, I expect to see that starting 11 playing week in, week out in the Premier League, knowing there'll be a bit of rotation in any cup competition that Arsenal have.
Yeah. And this further puts pressure on our attack, right? I mean, if you're talking to our discussion, if you want more Arsenal attackers, if you don't want City defenders, we want City attackers, we only have seven spaces. And then we'll come to Man United as well. We want Man United attackers too. It's just such an interesting time where there's more than seven good picks in attack, but there's only seven slots.
Yeah, one thing we can all agree on is you're almost certainly playing with a back three every week, which hasn't always been the case in the last 12 to 18 months. I mean, I think I started the season with a back five, possibly a four, but even at the end of last season, we were all having back fours. So to have a back three is quite nice because I think FPL is so much more fun when we're getting more attackers in our team.
Yeah. I mean, I hate watching a game where I just have one defender. Like I had Mings this game week and I was listening to the commentary on the Southampton and Aston Villa game. It is torture. Every time they're close to the goal, you're just basically nervous. And it's much more fun holding the attackers.
Yeah. And speaking of fun, United attack, Rashford, just so consistent, like Mr. Consistent at the moment. And then so many are now looking at Bruno with that double in mind. I mean, you know United better than anyone, Praz. What are your thoughts? And do we need three United players for this double? Or is two okay if they're the right two, i.e. Shaw and Rashford?
See, the problem is everyone has, or a lot of people have Shaw and Rashford. So in and around you, you're not going to make much gains if you have Shaw and Rashford, unless you triple captain Rashford or you go for the right third. Now, in the last double game week, Bruno happened to do what Bruno does over double game weeks, which is score in both games and ends up with a 19-pointer. Look, I think my view on Bruno is Ten Hag has started playing him more as a right forward instead of Antony. Either it's from the beginning of games like Man City or later on in the games like in Arsenal. So if he does that, he's even more involved in goals. But if he does not do that and plays centrally, then he's involved in assists. So you will get points off Bruno one way or the other. It's whether you get the goals versus the assists, which make the big difference. Over the double, people who went to him got slightly lucky because he did play that right forward and ended up with goals. So don't expect two goals again in the next double, because you may play Antony, he may play Sancho.
Especially because it's against two weaker teams. So like Crystal Palace and Leeds, we've seen him playing Bruno centrally in games like that.
Correct.
Whilst he's veered to the right against, say, Man City, and again the second half against Arsenal, you'd think Antony would start those two in 22, wouldn't you? Although he's been playing poorly.
Yeah, so Sancho is coming back as well. I saw him training. Garnacho could get minutes and Rashford plays on the right. It's also dependent on Martial's fitness. So on Man United, I know it's a boring answer, but what I'd say is there's three more games to come. There's the two League Cup semi-finals and there is the FA Cup round four. So let's see where Martial is, if Antony is looking a little bit better, if Sancho's getting some minutes, how Weghorst is looking. Maybe he's a third option. You know, at the moment, we think that he didn't look the part against Arsenal. Well, it was Arsenal. We didn't have the ball. So to expect him to sort of, you know, shine in such a game is a little bit harsh. So let's see how they look. For me, at the moment, if I was to pick them today, then I would say Bruno could be worth it for the double, just for the upside. But then you take him out, whether it's the week after or before game week 25, certainly, because they will likely blank. But apart from that, you couldn't go wrong with going for a Martial if he's fit. You couldn't go wrong with the Weghorst, or even consider a defense, because Martinez is back. De Gea is a decent option, and Man United at home have been very, very solid defensively. So maybe the third defender or second defender for Man United is an option.
Oh, there are so many options. I look forward to scouting United before the 22 deadline. It's great we get some games. Going back to that 90-minute thing that I said I like, Praz, it was interesting to see Wout Weghorst get 90 against Arsenal. When you're seeing attacking subs come on, like Garnacho, could very easily sacrifice a Weghorst, play Rashford number 9, Garnacho comes out wide. But Weghorst got the 90, and I just wonder if this is a player that Ten Hag really, really likes. We know he likes him. I wonder if he really, really likes him. If Martial and Weghorst are fit, knowing neither have been scoring goals, I'm interested to see which one's even above in the pecking order. We assume it's Martial, but it could be Weghorst. And I do wonder, again, with the fixtures coming thick and fast, ahead of a double, you know, can Martial even play Saturday, Wednesday? Probably can, but he can't get two sets of 90 in those games. Weghorst can, and he's more robust. And if he scores between now and 22, and there's a bit of momentum with Weghorst, the fact he's a 6 million forward, I might just be tempted to back him in the double, because I'm actually shopping for a third forward. I'm selling Havertz. The likes of Nonto have caught my eye, but for the fixtures, I'd love to be able to have a Weghorst if I thought he was going to start both games.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. Look, I think Martial is first choice, but this is, again, as of what we know today, and things change, as you mentioned. I think my prediction would be Martial, if he's back, he gets 65-65, Weghorst gets the rest. Or he gets 65 and misses the other game and Weghorst starts one. So which almost makes neither an option, but we will see. I think there's so much that can happen in the next three games that it's worth waiting for. But I do want to give a shout that if people wanted to go for the best third without worrying about anything, I mean, Bruno has got, what, 5 returns in his last 5. He's created more chances than anyone else since the restart. So he's still the creative machine. If you can get to him, he's an awkward price. But if you can get to him, then that's a good shout.
So annoying that to get to him, so many will have to sell Kevin De Bruyne, who doubles in game week 23.
Or Kane.
Yeah, or Kane. Yeah, fair point. Yeah, I might just look at my pressing monster, Wout Weghorst. I couldn't believe his pressing stats. He's a machine. He's got great running stats. He's got amazing work rate. And that's another reason why I think Ten Hag might really, really warm to him.
Yeah. Let's talk about triple captain before we move on.
Go on.
So look, my thinking on triple captain is, I mentioned United have been good at home defensively. So I see at least one clean sheet over the 2 points. And it's ironic, I'm talking about clean sheets when I'm talking about Rashford. Every point matters for triple captain. So that's you know, basically I like the midfielder pick for the triple captain because there's potential clean sheet points. There's an extra goal point as well for Rashford. Look at the last few home games, right? We've beaten Man City, Rashford got a 10-pointer. Beaten Bournemouth, 8-pointer for him. Nottingham Forest, 14-pointer. West Ham, 8-pointer. These are the last home games that Rashford has had. Even if he delivers one of those, so you get an 8-pointer and maybe a 3-pointer, 11 points, triple captain, you're happy. Everything else is upside. So for me, I want to get done with it. The only consideration is how many minutes he gets over these three cup games, because he has been flogged. I mean, we're using him a lot. So if he gets a little bit of a rest, ideally he misses one of the matches, maybe the second leg. United are ahead by a margin and they play Garnacho instead of Rashford. I would like to see that, just for me being comfortable that he gets 90 plus 90. If all of those are ticked, I'm just going to go for it. So that's my thinking, at least for now, for Rashford.
It's fair enough. The fixtures are there. The fixtures really are there. I thought at the start of this season when I saw Haaland scoring goals for fun, I just thought there is no way I will consider that chip for any other player. And he's still scoring hat-tricks. He just got one. But so many will look to Rashford. And as you say, an 11-pointer you would take. I mean, I triple captain Haaland last week for the 8-pointer over a double game week. And I think anything better than 10, you absolutely take.
Correct. Correct. And if Haaland had a better 23, I mean, he plays Arsenal. We saw how Arsenal were. Yes, I expect that to be an open game. And I think Haaland could score in both games again in that double. You're basically just trying to go for limiting your downside. And I think Rashford will have a lower downside because of the fact that he'll start both games, because of the fact that you expect at least one return. Haaland could go crazy over the double. So it's certainly not a no-brainer decision, but I want to get over the chip because if I have a fit player who I think I can captain who gets both games, just get it done. You never know if Haaland is even fit for 23, right?
Yeah. And if we don't triple captain Rashford in 22, I'm pretty sure we'll all be captaining him in 22 regardless, right? Yeah, if he does double. So I've currently got my armband on Rashford. Liverpool-Chelsea felt like a bit of a mid-table clash, Praz. Salah, quiet again. So quiet again. It's just a very easy sell for me. 12.8 million still.
One shot in total in the game for the third game in a row. I mean, this is really, really bad. And it's not just Salah. It's the whole team. I mean, Gakpo had 8 shots, but they were all really weak shots. In aggregate, they didn't create 1 XG. So it's not a team that you want to back, especially for the prices. It's almost like an opposite to Newcastle, where they've been priced for a top 4 team, but they're not acting like one. And Newcastle, as we said, is the opposite. So go for them if there's a double. But at the moment, I think this is a team where you want to avoid, you want to see some return to form with maybe Diaz back, Jota back, and they will. I mean, it's a good attack. But I think at the moment, if you have a double and if you have an option to switch to a De Bruyne or a Bruno Fernandes and sort of say adios to Salah, I think this is the time.
And Chelsea, it was nice to see Mudryk come off the bench. He really caught the eye. And I was surprised to see his FPL price come in so reasonable. He's a 7 million midfielder. This is the almost 100 million pound man. 1.6% owned already. Some perhaps Ukrainian managers out there that have gone buy straight away.
Or Chelsea fans.
Yeah, definitely one I've added to the watch list. But yeah, certainly not looking to buy Chelsea players yet in FPL, but worth monitoring. 7 million midfielder Mudryk there will be playing left of a front three. But also just note that Reece James and Chilwell both back in training. And when those Chelsea fullbacks are fit and playing, they'll get clean sheets, but they will get attacking returns for fun. So just monitor the likes of Reece and Chilwell. But for the time being, I think there's more exciting players to go and look at, especially those that have got double game weeks on the horizon, and Chelsea aren't one of those teams. But it was good to see them keep a clean sheet. And I do think there'll be FPL interest in that Chelsea squad for the second half of the season.
Agreed. And there are many happy Kepa owners who should continue to be happy.
I was very happy to own Kepa. As I said earlier, 10 and a 9-pointer. This is a 4.5 million goalkeeper. Monday night saw Spurs versus Fulham. Praz, what was your interest in that game? You're a Mitrovic owner, right?
I had both the strikers. So I wanted a 3-3. Obviously,
he wanted a high-scoring one.
ends up with a 1-0 and no bonus for the striker. But look, I think the game was Fulham completely dominated in the first half. So until Kane scored, I was in shock watching Spurs. And this is the reason I haven't owned Harry Kane. Now I know why. Because I end up having to watch Spurs games and they haven't been the most exciting. So look, to be honest, Kane just is a machine. He'll continue to deliver points because it's Kane. But as a team, they just look so disjointed. Son doesn't look the player that he was. And we've been saying this in every pod, so this is nothing new. They're still fifth. They're still close to Man United. So they're, you know, you never back against Antonio Conte. If they can figure it out, if Richarlison comes back in and provides that spark, if he can drop Son and actually do that, Kulusevski is already doing that on the other side of the pitch. I think they're a team that is there to back from a Kane standpoint, as well as from maybe a defender if you can get one. You see the upside with Emerson. He got a goal in the previous game week. He got a 9-pointer this game week. You just don't know who starts. But if you can, it's not a complete avoid in my view.
Yeah, and Harry Kane, is he good value? Because I know he's been super consistent and 16 goals is unbelievable. And he's ticked along nicely for returns. But in terms of explosive returns, and I've owned Harry Kane most of the season in premium drafts, I've still got him. He's only exceeded 10 points twice. Game week 16, he got 11 points. And then game week 19 recently, he had a 16-pointer. But he's had a lot of returns between sort of 6 and 10. And again, last night, we saw that. They're not the most explosive team, Spurs. And when you're spending that sort of money, you know, 11.7 million, you expect to have someone in your team that you can say, I'm going to give the armband to you because you're going to go and hit a 2-3 goal game, as we've seen with the likes of Haaland.
Yeah.
But Kane doesn't really offer that. He offers consistency, which is brilliant. But perhaps at 11.6, he's still on the expensive side.
It's a season like I don't remember. There's no second premium. I mean, we've talked about Salah, we've talked about De Bruyne not being in the goals, you've talked about Kane not having the 10-pointers, and then we've talked about all these very cheap midfielders being absolutely amazing, possibly even better than premiums, like the Mitomas and, you know...
Sakas.
Rashford,
so, yeah.
It's a crazy season. You can basically make a really, really good team with just having Haaland as your only premium and still basically outscoring most teams with two or three premiums. So it is one of those seasons where it's about the pick, not about the price. And yes, if you're saying that, is Kane in the top seven picks? Sometimes yes, but maybe you can make a case for going against him as well. So yes, he's in no means he's a must own, but he will get you points. If you can have him, put him there, forget about him, he'll get you points. He'll get you basically 6-7 points a game week for the next 8 game weeks.
Yeah, and with all those mid-price midfielders doing well, there's an argument to say you should have just one premium and lots of them. But at the same time, if we're having lots of these low to mid-price picks, we've got money in the bank. And I feel like money's not really been an issue. So having Kane at 11.6, 11.7 million and even not giving him the armband, that's fine. Because usually you'd say, oh, that's a wasted spot. He's never even your captain. Well, it feels fine because we've just got money in the bank. I'm constantly looking at my team right now, 1.3 million in the bank. That's not uncommon. I feel like I've had a million plus all season.
Yeah, yeah. That's the thing. People should not fixate a lot on team value this season. So people who hold value in Martinelli, or maybe you need to sell Haaland before a blank or sometime. Don't fixate on value so much this year. There's a lot floating around. I mean, if Haaland was, let's say, 18 million, you could still make a great team this year. That's just how we've been blessed with good cheap midfielders and defenders this year.
That was cool looking back at what was a very, very big weekend. If you can hear, I'm slightly croaky in my voice today, Praz. It's because I was at two of those games. And I realized when you go to two live games, you miss all the TV games because your whole day is taken up. So in terms of my sort of eye scouting, I've relied really heavily on highlights. So even more reason to have that chat with you this morning to go through some of the things I've missed. And of course, I'll be delving into some of the stats as well. Because when you're not watching those sets of 90, it's really important for me to back it up with the numbers. Absolutely. What are your plans for the next fortnight then? There's still lots of football, but no Premier League action per se. And I think that gives us a nice little time to reflect.
Yeah, nice little time to reflect, a break, just watch football without the fantasy element. I'm not going to do anything with my team until mid next week. I have my thoughts. I have my thoughts on getting Bruno, Nketiah, Odegaard, you know, the players that we've talked about who could be the right players for you to get over the doubles. But I'm going to be open-minded to pretty much everything and just absorb the football.
Yeah, similar for me. I know where I want to make sales. I think that third attacking spot and Weghorst is an interesting one, but Nketiah feels most likely, and Nonto could be a fun pick. But again, I'm not opposed to a 4-point hit either going into what could be a few doubles coming up. So again, just about absorbing and holding tight and not getting too trigger happy with things like price rises and team value. I'm happy just waiting and watching the football without fantasy.
Absolutely. And yeah, for the listeners, look, with so much football to be played ahead of that game week 22 deadline, have a plan, but be flexible. I mean, our advice would be just hold your transfers until those matches are finalized and we have confirmation of what the game week 22 double is, what the blanks in 25 and 28 are. So, you know, just be open-minded and watch everything closely. Kelly and Sam and Jules will be back with the FPL pod on Thursday. They will look back at FPL since the restart and start turning their attention to potential double game week 22. Don't forget to rate and review us wherever you're listening. We really appreciate it. And until next time, it's a goodbye for me.
And goodbye for me. Thanks, guys.